5 hours, Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news headline.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Russia under pressure to end its Syrian air campaign. Members of the International Syrian Support Group meet in Munich Thursday as Russia is criticized for causing widespread civilian casualties during its air campaign in support of government forces. The meeting in Germany aimed at finding ways to end the fighting and allow access for humanitarian aid. U.S. officials are quoted as saying Russia has proposed a March 1st ceasefire. Washington insists there be a truce immediately. U.S. spokesman Mark Toner said Wednesday Washington wants to see a resumption of peace talks suspended last week.
We want to get those talks back up and running. At the same time, you know, when the ISSG met last November, it was agreed that we needed a ceasefire put in place as soon as possible. That was part and parcel of UN Security Council Resolution 2254. So we need to pursue that. And given the facts on the ground, the increase in fighting over the past several days and the alarming number of refugees headed towards the border with Turkey and displaced people internally, it's just an added sense of urgency to get that ceasefire in place.
Members of the UN Security Council Wednesday pressed Moscow to halt its airstrikes around the embattled northern city of Aleppo, where a rights group says more than 500 have been killed since February 1st. Meanwhile, Turkey's Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu, speaking at The Hague, said Syrian and Russian military operations are an attempt to drive people out who don't support the Assad government. He said these attacks are intended to bring about a kind of ethnic cleansing in Syria. The African Union force in Somalia has warned al-Shabaab militants are planning to disguise themselves as AU soldiers to carry out attacks. AMISOM says the information plans to dress in AMISOM uniforms and carry out atrocities. This is VOA News. The U.S. Senate Wednesday unanimously approved tougher sanctions on North Korea and its foreign suppliers following the North's latest rocket launch and nuclear detonation, both banned under previous U.N. Security Council resolution. The measure targets Pyongyang's trade in minerals and other activities that generate hard currency. Senator Robert Menendez said the action is necessary because the U.N. has so far failed to act.
It is not enough to convene the United Nations Security Council for another round of hollow rhetoric that does nothing to the Kim regime, but signal a lack of international commitment to enforcing international will.
The House of Representatives passed similar legislation. It's not clear if President Obama will sign it into law. A South Korean report said the chief of North Korea's military was executed this month on corruption and other charges. Army General Ri Yong-gil, chief of staff of the Korean People's Army, also faced charges of pursuing personal gain. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has purged a series of officials to bolster his grip on power. The head of the U.S. Central Bank, Janet Yellen, warned Wednesday that falling financial markets and global economic weakness could slow the pace of interest rate increases in the U.S.
These developments, if they prove persistent, could weigh on the outlook for economic activity in the labor market. Although declines in longer-term interest rates and oil prices provide some offset.
She spoke to U.S. lawmakers on Capitol Hill. Meanwhile, the dollar retreated in Asia market activity Thursday following the Yellen testimony. The head of the Kenyan Athletics Federation, Isaac Mwangi, has dismissed allegations by two banned athletes that he asked them for money to reduce their suspensions.
These ladies, their cases, now that it is a public domain, was informed to them in Beijing, China. If it was informed in Beijing, China, how then can the federation bring it back and say, do you give money? It's not possible. How?
Joy Sankari and Francisca Koki Mangnunga say Mwangi asked each of them for $24,000 to reduce the four-year bans after testing positive for a banned substance during last year's World Championships. Last year, the president of Athletics Kenya, the vice president and team leader were all suspended after being accused of involvement in the potential subversion of anti-doping control processes. The U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation says its agents are closing in on the last four protesters holed up at the remote Mauer National Wildlife Refuge in Oregon, where they have been for 40 days. Negotiations to end the protest continue. A day after the New Hampshire state presidential primary election Tuesday, two more Republican candidates dropped out of the race. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and former Hewlett-Packard CEO Carly Fiorina decided to suspend their campaigns for the Republican presidential nomination. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Thursday, February 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi says it feels vindicated now that the United States has accused Rwanda of destabilizing Burundi.
For us, we say it's better later than never, because we've been telling the Obama administration about this for the last 7 or 8 months. But of course, in the beginning, we were told that we were just trying to divert the attention of the international community on Burundi.
Alain Nyamitwe is Burundi's foreign minister. A new report says the UN mission in the Central African Republic needs to be strengthened. Lessons learned from Ebola might help in the fight against the Zika virus. And it is exactly 1 week before Uganda's February 18th presidential election.
Even in my previous engagements, I've never had a situation where even the most poor peasants turn up and make financial contributions and bring materials, chickens and food and everything.
Dr. Chisa Besigye is the leading opposition challenger to President Yoweri Museveni, and the United Nations says road safety measures can prevent millions of deaths and injuries globally. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day and our Black History Month facts of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundi says it feels vindicated now that the United States has accused the Rwandan government of involvement in destabilizing activities in Burundi. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield told the Senate Foreign Relations Committee that the United States had warned Rwanda not to do anything that will further destabilize Burundi. Burundian Foreign Minister Alain Nyamitwe says the United States must go beyond the rhetoric and take concrete action.
For us, we say it's better later than never, because we've been telling the Obama administration about this for the last 7 or 8 months. But of course, in the beginning, we were told that we were just trying to divert the attention of the international community on Burundi towards another country. And yet we had credible intelligence confirming the fact that are now being accepted or publicly criticized by the United States of America. So for us, it's okay. But we want the U.S. to move beyond simple rhetoric and take action, because those are absolutely acts that disturb the peaceful coexistence of states. Those are acts that go against United Nations Charter. Those are acts that go against any established international organization that you can name.
So, Mr. Minister, when you say you hope that the United States will go beyond rhetoric, what specifically can the United States do?
Well, actually, we're not even calling just the United States of America. We're calling all the international community to take action against such acts, because I believe a state cannot disturb the peaceful coexistence with its neighbors and get away with it. I think that, it is high time we all, collectively started acting against aggressive states. We want to live in peace with our neighbors. As a matter of fact, we enjoy happy and peaceful relationships with all our neighbors except Rwanda. But we want it to be known to others that Burundi will not relent until it is respected in its rights, in its sovereignty, until that the population of Burundi is also respected.
Last week, there was a United Nations UN panel report saying that Burundian refugees have been recruited at refugees camp in eastern Rwanda with the goal of removing President Nkurunziza. President Kagame has dismissed that report as very childish.
That's not the first time that the government in Rwanda has dismissed credible reports. You'll recall that a number of reports were released on the role that that country has played in supporting the M23, which had attacked DRC a few years back. Another number of reports were released on the role that that country has played in destabilizing the eastern part of Congo, even before the M23. I'm not surprised, therefore, that even this one will be dismissed on the basis that it is, childish. All we know, and we have evidence to support our claims, is that refugees have been recruited, including underage refugees, and have been conscripted into rebel groups with the aim of attacking Burundi in order to destabilize the country and ultimately to remove the current government elected by the people.
Alain Nyamitwe is Burundi's foreign minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. It is exactly 1 week before Uganda's February 18 presidential and parliamentary elections, and main opposition candidate Kizza Besigye of the Forum for Democratic Change, the FDC, who has been drawing enormous crowds during his campaign rallies, says he fears voter bribery could be one of the obstacles to his victory. Mr. Besigye also said on Tuesday that if elected, he will set up a government of national unity that could even include members of the ruling National Resistance Movement, the NRM. Besigye has run against President Museveni in three previous elections. Earlier this week, Ugandan government spokesman Ofwano Opondo said the NRM will once again deflate what he called the Besigye bravado on February 18th. Dr. Besigye says perhaps Mr. Opondo was referring to the three previous elections that the government has stolen from him.
Extremely high enthusiasm the population has demonstrated, not only by turning up at our rallies, but by offering lots of cash contributions, which is unprecedented in Uganda's political history. Even in my previous engagements, I've never had a situation where even the most poor peasants turn up and make financial contributions and bring materials, chickens and food and everything. You know, if that demonstration of support is something that the government spokesman would like to brush aside as something that can be defeated, quite obviously he must have a different basis from what I would have as a basis for judging the popular support. And in our situation, we have an electoral commission, the body that organizes the elections, which is entirely serving at the pleasure of one of the candidates, Mr. Museveni. We don't have an independent electoral commission. Mr. Opondo, to that extent, would be correct to suggest that regardless of what the people's expressions may be in terms of whom they prefer as their leader, they can indeed declare whatever result they want.
Dr. Besigye, what do you make of the arrest of General Sejusa? Because the government has said that the general was arrested because he was involved in political activities.
Of course, that's just ridiculous. Because whereas, indeed, I am aware that military law forbids serving officers taking partisan political positions, which I'm not aware Mr. Sejusa has done, but it's very evident that that partisan political position is only offensive if it is against Mr. Museveni. We have many serving officers who are right now deeply involved, openly involved in the campaigns for Mr. Museveni's party all over the country, senior members of the military, and who no finger is being raised against at all, including, of course, the head of the Uganda police, who is also a general in the military, who has been making very partisan statements and, you know, clearly intervening in a very partisan way. So it is only the case that if you are a serving officer and your views are not aligned to those of Mr. Museveni, then you are quite obviously in trouble, because the military, again, serves as just a tool of Mr. Museveni.
You will form a united government that might even include members of the the ruling NRM. Is that possible?
Yes, it is actually a position of our party. It's a position of my election manifesto. We consider that any government that will succeed the NRM must function as a transitional government, because it must establish or re-establish foundations of a democratic state. We have been governed, certainly over the last 30 years, as a military dictatorship.
That was Dr. Kizza Besigye of the Forum for Democratic Change in Uganda. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, February 18th. Still to come, Mark Oldman Sports and our Black History Month and African History Facts of the Day. Please send your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 and a half minutes past the hour. The human rights group Amnesty International says more needs to be done to strengthen the UN mission in the Central African Republic, also known as MINUSCA. In a new report, Amnesty argues that weaknesses within the mission were exposed during last September's violence. As Nick Long reports from Bangui, MINUSCA says it has learned from that experience.
Amnesty's report pays tribute to MINUSCA forces who it says have saved many lives, helped prevent the Central African Republic from escalating further, and often displayed bravery at significant cost. But it says gaps in their capacity were cruelly exposed during 3 days of armed group violence in September when 75 civilians were killed in the capital, Bangui. Amnesty researchers say MINUSCA's 2,660 soldiers and police in Bangui were almost entirely absent from key areas of this conflict until late afternoon on the 27th and were unable to help transfer badly wounded people to hospitals. The report finds that since then the mission has performed better, but that key weaknesses remain. These include lack of armoured personnel carriers, lack of intelligence gathering capacity, and poor motivation of some units, particularly some that have not been paid their full UN salaries. Commenting on the report Wednesday, MINUSCA spokesman Vladimir Monteiro said the UN High Commission for Human Rights also raised concerns about MINUSCA's late reaction to the events in September.
Nous saluons ce rapport parce qu'il permet de voir les choses, mais en même temps...
We welcome this report, says Monteiro, because it helps us see things more clearly. At the same time, it confirms that MINUSCA's intervention has saved lives. The mission has learned lessons and has taken steps since then, he added.
L'une des principales mesures a été la création...
One of the main steps taken, he says, was to set up a joint task force for Bangui, which has produced results with MINUSCA's operation Free Movement, so that today people can move freely to and from the PK5 district. PK5 is Bangui's lone remaining Muslim community and has been the main flashpoint in the capital. Speaking on condition of anonymity, a MINUSCA insider told VOA that many criticisms in the report are not really of the United Nations, but of countries involved with the mission. Some governments do not pay their men their full UN salaries and do not have the means or the political will to move assets like armoured vehicles out of the home country, he said. MINUSCA will be on guard for any unrest as the CAR holds a presidential runoff vote this Sunday. Nick Long for VOA News, Bangui.
Now that the Ebola epidemic has ended in West Africa, Zika has the world's focus. And as Carol Pearson reports, health experts and governments are applying some of the lessons learned during the Ebola crisis in Africa to fight the Zika virus in Latin America and the Caribbean.
The Zika virus has claimed few lives so far, while more than 11,000 people died from Ebola.
We saw Liberians dying every day. And you see people sick. And often when I talk about it, I think I still shed tears because these were horrible experiences that we don't want for Liberians to go back to those days.
Experts don't expect Ebola to ever return with such ferocity.
Right now, in the three heavily affected countries of West Africa, there are response systems. I don't think we're going to see anything like the kind of terrible epidemic we saw over the past 2 years.
Those countries now have laboratories, better hospitals, and public health systems. The slow response from donor countries and the World Health Organization enabled Ebola to tear through West Africa. In contrast, the WHO has already called Zika an international emergency because of its link to birth defects. But experts say more needs to be done.
We need to build the systems around the world to find things when they first emerge, to stop them rapidly, and to prevent them whenever that's possible.
Large pharmaceutical companies worked cooperatively to produce Ebola vaccines. These companies say they need to be consulted sooner when a health crisis strikes.
We are necessary. NGOs cannot develop vaccines and manufacture them to the kind of scale that we need.
Drug companies are ready to start working on a Zika vaccine, and experts from the U.S. and other countries are working in Latin America to help find the cause of the virus's alarming link to birth defects. But funding is also critical, not just for Zika or Ebola, but to combat any virus.
Next time, we may not be so fortunate as to have something we can contain. We might have a novel influenza that will literally sweep the world and cause millions of deaths in its wake, and we can't allow that to happen.
VOA will take a closer look at Zika the international response to its spread, and its connections with birth defects as information unfolds. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
The United Nations reports that 1.25 million people died in road crashes every year. As Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, the United Nations says its road safety measures could save millions of lives.
The UN Economic Commission for Europe reports road crashes are the number one cause of death among people aged 15 to 29. The ECE, which regulates and sets road and vehicle safety standards, says another 20 to 50 million people worldwide are injured in these accidents. It says 90% of the 1.25 million road deaths worldwide occur in low and middle income countries, although they account for only 54% of the world's vehicles. It notes Africa has the highest fatality rate, representing 43% of road traffic victims. UNECE Executive Secretary Christian Fries Bach says these deaths and injuries result in tremendous loss for grieving families and severe economic costs for society. He says societies have to pay the health costs of people who are badly injured and can no longer work and be productive. He says ways to avoid road crashes are known, and the auto industry knows how to produce safe cars, which are universally sold in Europe, North America, and other developed countries.
But when they sell the same car in Africa and Latin America, they take out the safety features. They take out the airbags, they weaken the frame, they produce cheap cars that look exactly like the cars we see on the roads in Europe, but when people crash, they get killed.
Bach says manufacturers can implement key safety measures in their vehicles without significant cost. He says a package of measures that can save lives, including airbags, autonomous braking systems, and seat belts, would cost less than $200 per car. ECE Chief Bach notes too many pedestrians in Africa lose their lives because roads do not have simple safety measures such as proper crossing points. He notes the World Bank, the African Development Bank, and other development institutions and agencies that pay the cost of infrastructure in Africa should insist road safety measures be implemented. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with cricket. England beat Namibia by 203 runs at the ICC Under-19 Cricket World Cup in Fatula in Bangladesh on Wednesday. Today, Thursday, Namibia faced Nepal in the seventh-place playoff. Turning to athletics, the Africa Women's 400-meter hurdles champion Wenda Nel of South Africa aims to reach the finals at the Rio de Janeiro Olympics in Brazil. Nel admits that being a finalist at the World Athletics Championships in Beijing, China last year has given her more confidence.
My main goal was always to try and run sub 54 seconds, so that is what I will aim for this year.
Because you know some of your key rivals around the world. Do you see yourself in the mix, at least with the semi-finals or even possibly a final position in Rio?
Definitely. I think the final in Beijing gave me a lot of confidence, knowing I am capable of running amongst the world's best. So I'm going to do what I can, put in the hard work, and then hopefully I can run again in Olympic final.
Just before the Olympics, we have the Africa Championships, and this year it's on your home soil here in South Africa. How does that fit into your general program leading up to the Olympics?
It will be an important competition, as I am defending champion. Yeah, we will see how the races in Europe goes, and then I'll come back for the Africa Championships.
That was Wenda Nel, the Africa Women's 400-meter hurdles champion, speaking in the South African capital, Tshwane. Finally, in football, Kenya is set to build two new stadiums for the 2018 Orange African Nations Championship, the Kenya Sports, Arts and Culture Cabinet Secretary Hassan Wario told the Nairobi media. He says the stadiums will be built in the capital Nairobi and Eldoret, some 300 kilometers northwest of Nairobi. Presently, Kenya has two stadiums in Nairobi that meet FIFA-approved standards. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
It's time now for our Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 11th. On this day in Black history, the first fugitive slave law was passed by the United States Congress. The law required that slaves who ran away be captured and brought back to their masters. Those who knew of and did not report runaway slaves could be fined and even jailed. Also on this day in 2012, superstar singer Whitney Houston died at the age of 48 in a Los Angeles hotel the night before the Grammy Awards. Plagued by substance abuse in her later life, Houston had become one of the most popular and celebrated singers in her early career. Did you know that a Virginia slave named Henry Brown escaped to freedom by packaging himself in a wooden box? He made up his mind to escape after his wife, Nancy, and their three children were sold away from him. In March 1849, Brown had a white abolitionist friend named Samuel A. Smith packaged him in a wooden box and shipped him by Adams Express to anti-slavery headquarters in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. 27 hours later, Brown arrived safely. On this day in African history, in 1990, Nelson Mandela of South Africa was released from Victor Verster Prison near Cape Town after 27 years. In 1993, Mandela won the Nobel Prize for Peace for helping to end apartheid and establish a multiracial government in South Africa. And on this day in African history, in 2011, President Hosni Mubarak of Egypt resigned after being in power for 30 years. Mubarak had refused to step down earlier as protesters demanded his removal after weeks of anti-government sentiments. Those are your Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 11th. Congratulations to Nok Kaunda of Lilongwe, Malawi, Abraham Lang of Jos Plateau State, Nigeria, and George Temba of Capitol Building in Monrovia, Liberia. You are the winners of our February 10th question, who was the first African-American to receive the Pulitzer Prize? The answer, Gwendolyn Brooks. Now, here is our question for today, February 11th. Who started the idea of Black History Month celebration in the United States? Once again, who started the idea of Black History Month celebration in the United States? Send your answers to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Remember to include your mailing address. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Don't give it up, don't give it up. Get up, stand up. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Two senior U.S. diplomats on Wednesday accused Rwanda of destabilizing activities in neighboring Burundi, where political violence has left hundreds dead. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield spoke of her concerns to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. She cited a number of reports from U.S. officials on the ground in Africa. Another top diplomat, the U.S. envoy for Africa's Great Lakes region, Tom Perillo, said there are credible reports of Rwanda officials recruiting Burundi refugees in Rwanda camps to fight for the Burundi opposition. Nigeria says it will boost security at camps for refugees driven from their homes by violence after two female suicide bombers killed at least 58 people at a camp in Dikwa. Vice President Yemi Osinbajo said Wednesday it is regrettable that the heartless terrorists chose to unleash their wickedness on people who were taking refuge from previous acts of destruction in their homes. That's it for this Thursday, February 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ullman, along with our engineer, Dave Magnus, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good Thursday.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA News is always at the tip of your fingers.
All the news you want about Africa and the world, day and night, is available on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Make it your first source of news and information.